Welcome to another episode of the Marketing Society podcast. Today, I'm joined by Nathan Still, Digital Marketing and Transformation at Skoda, and Jay Tomlin, Creative Director at Tribal Worldwide London. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
So I just want to start with a quick introduction, really. Normally I do it, but I probably mess them right up and sort of bumble through them. So it's probably better if you guys do it. So do you want to just introduce yourselves, who you are and what you do at each of your companies?
Okay. Jay, do you want to go first or shall I?
You go first, Nathan.
Okay. Yeah. So as you said, Nathan Still, I work on all things digital marketing transformation for Skoda. As part of the Volkswagen group, and basically we make the website work is the easiest way to do that. We work with quite a few agencies and Tribal are our lead agency to making sure our website is running and meeting all of our customer demands as well.
Sounds good. And Jade?
Hi, so yeah, I'm the creative director at Tribal Worldwide London, and I've been working on Skoda account for about 3 years now. I work on a couple of other accounts, but yeah, very close to the Skoda account, I must say.
Sounds good. So I've got one or two themes that I'm trying to smash together for this particular podcast. So it's kind of about sort of building back better creatively, creatively. That's what I've gone with. So I may change it afterwards, depending on what we chat about. But so I want to start by talking about being creative during lockdown, and then sort of move on to what Skoda are up to and how they're sort of tackling things as well, and how you're both working together on that. So I just want to start with a piece you wrote about in Campaign Jade about creativity, and you said as long as you're relaxed, new ideas are able to form. With many of us in this kind of state of anxiety, including marketers, how does one stay relaxed at the moment? I mean, how do both of you have ideas and just work in a calm manner? You got any secrets?
Yes, very simple. Don't read the news ever. Just avoid it. Just live in your own little bubble while this is all going on. I think it was an early BBC breakfast show that I think Japan had gone into lockdown way before the Western world. And that was one advice that someone had said. And I just picked up on it and was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to just stop. After watching a couple of Boris speeches, I just thought, yeah, no, this is just, it's carnage. They don't know what's going on. There's no point listening to it. So yeah, lots of walks, you know, take advantage of not having to commute in the extra time, walking at lunchtime and in the morning, that sort of thing.
How do you guys balance that though as marketers? Because obviously you got to pay attention to the world and society and culture and what's going on to kind of effectively, you know, market to people and do your jobs. I mean, how do you do that without, you know, short of putting on 100 million filters on Twitter so you don't see certain things? I mean, how do you sort of get that balance right?
So I think for me, it has been really hard to achieve that balance. Certainly working in the digital area, that's sort of what been the main communication point for a lot of our customers, and so there's been a massive demand for additional information. People have lots of questions, so for us it has been, especially the first couple of months, absolutely mental, to be frank. Everyone's trying to get their normal jobs done, and then there's all this additional information as well, so it has been really hard to sort of apply those filters. For me, you do the practical things. Put the lid on your laptop down, put your phone down, and just sit for a little bit. It's really difficult. I think going back to the creativity point that Jade was just making, you can't force it. You have to find that point. No one ever has those really good creative ideas when they're trying to force it and sitting there going, I must come up with something. I mean, what was it? Who's the bloke that sat in the bath, the Eureka moment? You know, it wasn't that at his desk trying to push it. You just need to make that time to sit. And if that is, you know, sitting in the garden rather than going down the pub with your mates or going for a walk rather than something else, then that's what you just need to do. You just have to have that discipline. Having the time to do that, though, has been a bit more limited. So it is difficult to achieve that balance, but you just have to be, you know, quite ruthless with it.
Yeah, we had a speaker, I think, at a conference last year or the year before, and then he spoke a few months ago for us on a webinar, an author, a guy called Rob Poynton. And his book is called Do Pause, and it's all about the value of pausing and sort of trying to build that into your day. So you just don't, you're not just incessantly typing or sending emails or going crazy. Is it difficult? I mean, obviously you can apply it individually, but is it difficult to try and build in that pause for you and also your teams, the people that you work with?
It is a little bit, actually. I mean, I think, you know, everyone, as I say, has been working really hard and probably sort of a bit later. And what I've tried to do in, we always have like weekly team meetings, no matter what. So what I've tried to do is build in half an hour every day, either in the afternoon or the morning, where we sort of have a quick catch up. And the majority of that time actually is more just having a bit of a chat and a laugh and a giggle, because I think you kind of have to do that, because everyone is on their Slack channels or sending videos anyway and emailing. It's relentless. So people probably know a bit more what's going on around the business anyway, because of those, you're constantly on it. So having that half an hour scheduled is really important. And we probably 10 minutes talk about work and 20 minutes just chew the fat and just like chill for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. We do the same. We have, creative catch up at 9:30. And I think half the team wouldn't be out of bed if we didn't have that. So, yeah, and it's really nice to just check in with each other and make sure everyone's doing okay, as well as obviously the workload and what people have got going on, because that's the other thing, because you know, obviously some teams are still furloughed, and although, like, you know, it's really difficult for them, it is also, we've got to be quite sensitive to the people who are working and doing double the amount,
ones left behind.
And making sure that they're not too overloaded, and if people get too siloed, you know, you check in with them, they're like absolutely drowning in it. So I think it's important to keep the communication up a little bit.
How are you both finding in terms of creativity and being remote? So obviously, you know, that kind of way of collaborating with people, is that the same as it was before? Were you used to working remotely, or is it harder now? Or, you know, have you got any tips that you, or clever things that you found that have helped during this time to sort of be creative in a socially distanced way?
I think, yeah, just, you know, having Slack is great, and like having the different threads for particular projects or themes is really crucial. But also just being able to have those Slack calls with the right individuals at the right time. And so the Skoda digital team are really good at coming in previously to lockdown on like Tuesdays and Thursdays. So there's a lot of opportunity, you know, if we had little ideas or copy or visuals we wanted to approve, we would just catch up with them. So we don't have that as much, but having, you know, open channels on Slack is really useful for that collaboration to continue.
And
we've generally been pretty good, particularly in the digital team, of making sure people have sort of flexibility to work from home and work remotely. It's not something I'm particularly precious about. It's something that I've always done in previous roles as well. So for us, it's I don't think it's made too much difference, because we're used to operating on Skype and Slack and all those sorts of things. But I definitely do miss the office chat, be that whether in our offices or in other offices. As Jade said, you know, being able to walk past someone's desk and just pick up on a conversation or just stop and have a quick 5-minute chat, that is invaluable. And I think we are missing that. I don't think it's all it's definitely not a bed of roses, which we're trying hard to make it better, but it's hard, and I think you do miss out on quite a lot.
I've got a colleague that occasionally does that. She'll just send a Slack and go, "Have you got 2 minutes?" I'm like, "Yeah," expecting a message back, and then she'll just send me a Zoom invite, and she'll have just started a spontaneous Zoom. Just because she likes the visual, I guess. I kind of prefer to take my phone and just walk around outside, because I'm not looking at someone, and I can walk and just be outside. But yeah, it's tricky. Everyone's kind of different in what they do, and some people like demand to see your face, and others don't care. They don't want to see you. They don't look at me.
It's a bit wrong. When you get big conference calls, so within the VW group, we use Skype quite a lot, which is okay. It's not the best video conferencing tool. And I think some people have adopted it and some haven't, but it is quite interesting when you get a lot of people and like some have got their cameras turned on and some haven't. Are you in your pajamas or you just don't like that visual perspective?
Yeah.
I had this thing of putting my camera on, but just having it on like 2% of my face and just mostly on the wall. And so it was sort of a protest early on. I was just like, don't look at me.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but yeah, I think because I had a crap camera, but now it's better.
I think it's quite nice to look at people's have a nose in people's houses as well.
There is that, isn't it? Yeah, it's the human, because somebody did a survey once and on LinkedIn or whatever, it was just a quick poll, but they were like, who do you spend most of the time looking at on the camera? And like, it was like 90% of people put myself. So it's literally, we're all just like checking, just making sure, like, do I look good on this, in this tiny little lens or whatever?
I'm always like, oh, who's that bald guy?
Yeah. Well, when we started off, we would literally do. We've done hundreds of webinars now, it seems, since lockdown. You know, we do like 130 events a year, and all of them have gone online. And we've actually added more because we don't need venues or anything. But the amount of people we've had to tell to like put themselves in the shot, because they were just you know, it would be off or to the side or looking at the ceiling. And I think we've all sort of like leveled up, I guess, in terms of tech and digital.
Absolutely. I think that's quite a big thing for the industry in general, is though people that were normally not into looking at sort of like those online channels, you know, and didn't do video calls and actually didn't like, you know, having web chats. Everyone was having family quizzes over Zoom, weren't they, for a long time. Super quizzed out, but I think it's just made people more engaged in those channels, and people that would have normally not gone had like a video chat with a retailer are now quite happy to do that. So we've seen certainly the adoption curve of some of those technologies are really starting to ramp up, just because it's part of people's everyday lives now.
I mean, you guys finding that from sort of a marketing point of view, because everyone's talking about how brands now, they're all having to act like challengers, they're all having to act like startups and just kind of completely, in some cases, reinvent what they do, whether it's their products or at least their marketing and how they go about it. I mean, is that exciting or is it just exhausting?
A bit of both. I think we have seen, you know, obviously lockdown's brought a lot of budgetary challenges, but it's also meant a lot of digital projects, which impacts my team quite a lot, have been brought forwards because the company is still investing in those areas, which is exciting because they're cool, new, shiny things to work on. But actually, it's also, there's that balance of, well, it's additional workload as well. So it's both exciting and exhausting, but which is maintainable for a bit. I'm sure there'll be a point where my team's completely burnt out, but we'll keep an eye on it.
Well, that's it. I mean, have you been given more team, or is it like you've got the same team? You just need to do twice as much now.
From my team in particular, I think the business has been really supportive. I recently had a few people move internally. They've been successful in other roles. And the business has been really supportive in terms of making sure that they're replaced really quickly and making sure that we're not losing heads in digital. So I haven't had some of the issues that maybe other departments have had in terms of headcount and that kind of stuff. And I think the business has also been supporting in terms of bringing people back from furlough sooner than other areas. So I think they absolutely recognise that digital is important and they're investing in it. So so for me, it's a bit tough, but you know, the business is supporting it as best as it can right now. So I'm happy with where we are.
Okay, that sounds good. I mean, keeping things sort of pandemic, unfortunately, and in terms of the chat. One of the things I wanted to talk about was one of our writers, Katie Lee at Lucky Generals, she wrote a little while ago about the moral versus commercial implications of kind of marketing and selling during a pandemic, and she talked about conscious capitalism. I mean, where do you both stand in terms of how you go about, you know, because businesses need to continue and they need to keep trying to grow, but also at the same time, there's, you know, we're all looking at the world going, how do we build it back better, because what we did before didn't necessarily work. How do you guys go about that, creating that balance and striking that chord with people in terms of you know, marketing during a pandemic?
I think for us, like, we've shifted our focus to two areas, really. I think in terms of the copywriting that goes on the website, we're obviously, you know, tempted on sort of the bigger models within the range to sort of talk about them being the most luxurious or those sorts of, that sort of language. But we've kind of toned that down a little bit to be a bit sensitive, I guess, to, what's happening at the moment.
But yeah, no, I just, I guess I find it interesting because a lot of our writers have written about that, about the return to business, and trying to build back better. I mean, obviously, so Skoda, you guys have got the challenge of electric vehicles, and is it proven difficult to move people to electric? I mean, or actually during this time, are people looking at the world and having melting down and saying actually the climate crisis is still there? Has it made selling electric vehicles easier? Or
I think EV is it's a huge focus for most automotive companies. I wouldn't say Skoda is particularly special in terms of the focus that's been put on it. It's hard to, I mean, we've done a lot of research over the last few years, and we've launched quite a few sort of electric cars, both hybrid and pure EV. We've got some really exciting products coming up. I don't want to go into the big sales pitch for Skoda, but it's hard to distinguish whether the interest in EV, which is absolutely ramping up, is to do with COVID and people's environmental concerns, or whether it's just because there's more cars on the market. Historically, it was like a Nissan Leaf or a Tesla. Tesla, right? That's the ones that people knew. And people are just becoming a lot more aware of the brands that now have EV cars, and they're all on TV, and there's all different types of mild hybrids and all sorts of different types of cars and self-charging. And maybe, so I think it's just in people's mindsets now. I don't think it's directly related to COVID directly. It's hard to, but all of those things are contributing to it. More models, more environmental interest. People sort of are re-evaluating their lives a little bit. It's definitely a combination of the three. I couldn't pinpoint if it was just the COVID area.
I mean, is it across the whole of the automotive industry, though? I mean, the manufacturers of cars doing one thing, but I mean, are you still facing kind of the sort of infrastructure issues of, I don't know, charging points, for example?
Yeah,
is that still a thing?
It's a huge thing. I actually presented to one of our internal panels the other day on some of the research that we've been doing over the last year. So we've done a lot of research with Tribal in terms of desk research. There's hundreds of reports out there, so trying to make sense of them. There's hundreds of news stories that are scaremongering as well. Trying to make sense of it is really difficult. So it's something we pay particular attention to. We've done lots of diary studies with customers as well, just to understand what their journey is. And there's a number of themes. One is like the cost of cars. So they are a bit more expensive, but people are interested in what the running costs are. Some of the barriers are, historically it's been about range, but gone are the days where a car would do 50 miles if you're sort of between 200 and 300 and even above that. So range isn't necessary. Range anxiety is slowly going away. It's still there, but it is more infrastructure. Is actually becoming more of a problem. People worrying about where charging points are. So for us, it's about reassuring them there are sufficient charging points. Actually, you don't really need a charge. You know, with the charging points, if you can charge at home. So I think there's going to be an adoption of people that have got their own car garages and driveways. They'll be fine. People that have on-street parking, then that might be a bit more of an issue. But it's a bit of a change in mindset for people as to how they charge their cars. You leave your car charging overnight, like you would your phone, rather than spending 10 minutes going to the garage and filling your car petrol every week. So it's a bit of a different thing. So it's quite an educational piece for us to manage that.
I mean, is it all on you guys though? Or is it, is there an element of like the government needs to do more? Or, I mean, I drove through Southern Germany a couple of years ago, and it felt like they had a lot of adoption in terms of that sort of stuff. Yeah. And, there were wind farms everywhere and there were electric charging things everywhere. And then you come back to the UK and go, what are we doing?
Yeah, I don't think it's all on us. You look at where customers are researching, they're going on to all sorts of their third-party sites for research. They want to get that reassurance that it's around. They want to listen to their friends. So the government has got a big thing to do. I think supporting the industry with grants and the right infrastructure and making the most of that and promoting that is absolutely sort of for them to do. But obviously we can lobby them and try and get the support, because I think something that we've invested in massively as a group and just want to move forwards.
Mm. I mean, are you guys finding that, is it, do you feel that we've reached that kind of tipping point and, you know, it's the sort of combination of, I don't know, the pandemic and the climate change and just people becoming much more aware of what they buy and they consume these days. They feel that, you know, like brands need to stand for creating something better in the world rather than just, you know, consuming it all the time, you know?
Yeah. It's a difficult one, really. Everyone's seen news over recent years, you know, the press that coverage that VW Group have had with emissions and what have you. So, you know, we as a group have recognised that, and there's huge investment across the group to just produce carbon neutral cars, make sure factories are carbon neutral, make sure that, you know, all, you know, things like batteries are ethically produced. So it's a big thing for us, and I think, you know, we're as a group, and they're certainly leaders globally in terms of investment and trying to make sure that we answer some of those ethical environmental questions of us.
Mm. And I mean, we've just got a few minutes left. I just want to talk about kind of purpose, because that I know purpose has been knocking around for years, but it feels like these days, one of our writers actually wrote a piece about saying if brands that don't stand for anything, do they even have a place in the world these days? What do you guys both think? Is that the case? Do you need to have a really strong driving purpose, or you might as well not exist?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And obviously for automotive, that's quite, you know, it's a tricky one because people will see them in a certain light. But I think the amazing thing about Skoda brand is obviously, you know, it had a previous reputation and we were, you know, really hard to deliver, you know, what it stands for now, and that it is driven by something different. It is, you know, an amazing car. And it is all.
You've got one now, haven't you, Jade?
I do. I actually bought a Skoda in lockdown.
Oh, I thought you were going to get sent one. You'd be like, oh, where's my freebie?
Yeah, well, some products get sent. I think a car is like, you know, you'd be super lucky if you get sent a car. But yeah, so. Yeah, it's a great brand, and I think, you know, now more than ever with Skoda bringing out offers like 0% interest, it stands for purpose in the sense that, you know, it's a good valuable buy for a quality product, basically. So for me, that's what excites me about working on the brand, is like, you know, it's just getting people around the perception or making sure that they get the right information about the features and all the different things that it can offer. And that's kind of its purpose in my mind.
I mean, how do you guys go about it from a bravery point of view? Because so everything we do about the site is empowering our members to sort of be braver leaders and think differently. So in terms of creating that environment where you do that to then, you know, sort of stand out from the crowd. What's Dave Trott's thing about zigging when everyone zags? I think it's Dave Trott. Might be John Hegarty, actually. But anyway, the whole, you know, going the opposite way to everybody else, which I feel must be a thing that must happen in the automotive world. Because, you know, you start to see a lot of like sameness in terms of, you know, advertising and messaging. I don't know, how do you differentiate and stand out in the crowd, would you say?
I think it's, you know, for us, we look at comms, but we're obviously there to support in terms of like the digital products and the website. So it's really making sure that customers get things that is actually valuable. So it might not be a big, wow, shiny, you know, thing that you'll see on TV. But if you are searching for a car, and probably now more than ever, you're going to be on websites looking for things, that you have the tools that are super simple. And, you know, looking at things like Nathan mentioned before, like cost of ownership, comparing petrol and electric, you know, we build all those kinds of infrastructure for the site.
Sounds good. And I guess just to wrap up, if you had sort of One kind of brave tip from both of you one tip in terms of how to be a brave marketer during lockdown. What would it be? It can be anything you want.
For me, it would have to be keep showing your favourite ideas. So Nathan was probably used to me sharing ideas in a deck, and possibly 90% of the wildcard ones never get picked, but keep showing them because eventually some of them do. So that would be my big tip. Keep showing your wild ideas.
Don't be afraid to show them, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good tip, Jane. It's one of the reasons why we work with you is that you're constantly trying to help us push the boundaries. We're very much aware of some of our restrictions, in terms of being able to large organisation moving fast, sometimes limited budgets, sometimes limited technology. But I think it's the support that you give us that keeps us fresh. So keep doing that. For me, if I had one tip, don't be afraid to do stuff that feels uncomfortable. When I'm trying to be creative, I always try to think, well, what would you normally do? Let's do the opposite. And what would that mean? And actually put yourselves in those uncomfortable positions to really stretch your thinking. Don't be afraid to go, well, that's completely wrong. There's got to be another way.
So the sort of what if question, what if we did this?
What if you just did the complete opposite of what you do today? What would happen? And really think that through and take the time to do that.
Yeah, it's quite freeing. Well, thank you both for your time. I know it's Friday and a heat wave, I don't know if a heat wave is 2 days of heat, but it's a heat wave at the moment. So thank you very much. And enjoy both your weekends.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.